Right here.
All right.
Right here.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. House Committee on Revenue will come to order. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2478. Who's on that one? Ah, good. Come and tell us about this bill.
Do you care who carries it?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. For the record, my name is Christine Barniak with the Legislative Revenue Office. And House Bill 2478 would bypass the Board of Property Tax Appeals process for taxpayers in principal and secondary industrial properties worth over $1 million. And this measure would bring the property tax appeal to the tax court slightly more quickly, and therefore save interest payments to the taxpayers if the value is reduced and the court finds ultimately in the taxpayer's favor. And there has been a revenue impact issued for this measure, and it's $0.15 million per biennium.
Wonderful.
I'm Sarah.
Ah. The traffic wasn't as bad as you thought.
My driver took that as a challenge. It's
okay. All right. We had enough. Yeah. So do we have a motion on this bill? What's your pleasure?
I move approval of House...
Representative Vera Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move approval of HB 2478.
Representative Eric Brewer moves that House Bill 2478 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion on House Bill 2478? Yes, Representative Vance.
Mr. Chair, did anybody testify against this bill? I don't recall anyone saying anything against it.
I don't recall anyone speaking against the bill. We did have a bunch of questions to make sure we understood it, but I don't believe anyone said anything negative about it.
That was my recollection. Thank
okay.
you.
Is it, any other discussion? Is there any objection? Oh, yes, there is. Representative Wand.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking over my notes, Representative Benz, I didn't have anybody testifying against, and I wrote down specifically that there was no expectation from the staff that there would be a request for additional personnel at the tax court level to handle the influx of appeals. So I thought that was important to point out as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, and in fact, I think we got testimony that this might lead to earlier settlements in some cases. It may actually reduce the amount of time that people take to get these things resolved.
Yeah, I recall that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? All right. Please note that the members on here are all voting aye, and the ones who are not here are excused. And with that,
wait a minute.
Do we have another one?
Yes.
We do. Representative Reed, we are in a work session on the motion on House Bill 2478 to send to the floor with a due pass recommendation. How do you vote?
Vote aye.
Well, Representative Reed votes aye, so we have unanimity so far, and with that, we'll declare the motion is carried, and we'll close the work session on House Bill. I can't close it yet. I have to assign a carrier. Representative Wand, will you carry this bill?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
The two of us here are conspiring against you this morning.
I can see that, that would be no problem. Absolutely.
No problem. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, it's yes. always nice to have a freshman.
It is.
You have two.
No.
And having assigned a carrier, we now can close the work session on House Bill 2478. let's open a work session on House Bill 2071. And that's someone else's. Chris, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2071, as you recall, We grant rulemaking authority to the Department of Revenue to require paid tax preparers and corporations to file electronic returns if they are required to do so at the federal level. In your packet, you have a fiscal impact statement, which shows a minimal expenditure impact, and a revenue impact statement, which also shows a minimal impact. The intent, in DOR's experience, they have found that electronic returns tend to be more accurate than paper returns, and there can be situations where there could either be a revenue loss or revenue gain. For example, if using software, a taxpayer discovers a deduction or credit that they otherwise wouldn't have known they could have taken, they would take that, and that would be a slight revenue loss. It could also, through the software, improve the arithmetic and the calculations of such credits and deductions and set those correctly, and that could be a slight revenue gain, so the revenue impact is listed as minimal.
And I assume also that the questions that this software uses might elicit additional sources of income that the taxpayer hadn't thought about, which might also increase revenue.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
It goes both ways.
Goes both ways, yeah. We are on 2071. What's the committee's pleasure? Representative Ed Brewer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move for approval and recommendation to the floor for passage of House Bill 2071.
Thank you. Representative Ed Brewer moves House Bill 2071 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? None. The motion carries. With the people who are here, is anyone missing?
Ms. Bailey.
Oh, Representative Bailey's excused, and the motion carries. Representative Eric Brewer, will you carry this bill?
Would love to.
Would seem to be very appropriate given your background. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2071 and open a work session on House Bill 2570. Back again. If I had realized that, I would have done them in a different order. Sorry. So what have we here?
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. House Bill 2570 would change the rules for bona fide purchasers. Oh, yeah. Currently, if a bona fide purchaser has a role change anytime in the future, more than a year retroactively, they do not have to pay for the role change if the role change involves additional taxes in that first year. And if the role change is made for the same tax year, in the same tax year, they will have to pay those taxes for the role change if they have not purchased their house before October of the year. And this measure would simply make the treatment of the appeals the same between appeals or not appeals but the
certification, the rolls,
the roll certification process more uniform from roll certifications that come or that are applied retroactively and roll certifications that happen in the same year. And there is a minimal fiscal, or there's a no fiscal impact statement on this, and there's a statement of revenue impact that it is positive but relatively small because the amount of rule changes that happen in a year is about $2 million. And the portion of these that apply to bona fide purchasers are expected to be relatively small, but this would increase revenues.
Thank you. Committee, what's your pleasure? Representative Ed Brewer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move approval and recommendation for approval to the floor for House Bill 2570.
Thank you. Representative Ed Brewer moves House Bill 2570 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection to this motion? I don't see any. The motion carries. And Representative Berger has agreed to carry this bill. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2570.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
I move the rules be suspended and Representative Bailey be allowed to vote on the motion on House Bill 2478.
Representative Berger moves for suspension of the rules to allow Representative Bailey and Representative Reed to vote on House Bill.
He voted on all of them.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Oh, you did. Okay, you got here just in time. All right. Representative Bailey to be allowed to vote on House Bill 2478. Is there objection to the motion to suspend the rules? I don't see any. The rules are suspended. Representative Bailey, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Bailey votes aye. And with that, Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended and Representative Bailey be allowed to cast his vote on House Bill 2071.
Representative Berger moves that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Bailey to vote on House Bill 20, on the motion to send House Bill 2071 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. Representative Bailey, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Bailey votes aye. Thank you.
Just noticed he was sitting there.
Now, we did just recently get the updated agenda, yes. And so we're ready to open do I have the right one now? Revision one.
Yes.
Possible bill. It's snuck in at the bottom. So we'll open a work session on possible bill introduction. Paul?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have a list of concept LCs. There's three of them there. I also remind you that tomorrow at 5 o'clock is the deadline for introducing committee bills. So we'll also post for work session for tomorrow for possible bill intro. So you have three there in front of you, LC 1655, LC 1808, and LC 2171.
Thank you. Is there a Representative Berger?
That was Mr. Chair. I move that LC 1655 dated 2/11/11, LC 1808 dated 2/11/11, and LC 2171 dated 12/10/10 be introduced as committee bills.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves the introduction of LC 1655, LC 1808, and LC 2171 as committee bills. With the usual proviso that voting for this motion does not commit anyone to support, oppose, work on, or otherwise have anything to do with these bills unless they feel like it later. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion carries, and these bills will be introduced as committee bills. Did you have something else?
No, except to say that, Mr. Chair, I have to leave for a couple of days, probably. I understand there is a work session tomorrow to introduce committee bills. I will be writing a letter to Mr. Warner indicating that I'm fine with that, because we generally don't do any work sessions without both of us here. I'll see you in a couple of days.
Thank you. Thank you, and good luck.
Yes,
yes. Representative Berger is working on the issue involving a possible new constituent. So, very soon, I think. And with that, we'll close the work session on bill introduction and wish her luck. You know, she was supposed to sign these, wasn't she? Grab her before she gets away. Yeah. And we have to figure out how we're going to deal with tomorrow. That will be fun. All right. And with that, we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2564, the checkoff bill. And you're doing double duty, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. Chris?
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next item on the agenda is the informational
hearing. Oh, the information hearing. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2564 and open the information meeting on the charitable checkoff program. I'm sorry, I got things out of order. We'll do the public hearing on 2564 after the information meeting. Please, go ahead.
We have Mr. McDonald and from the Charitable Checkoff Commission and Ken Ross from the Department of Revenue to provide a little bit of history and background on the program.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart. Ken Ross with the Department of Revenue.
Just to give a quick overview of the charitable checkoff program. This is a program that began back in the early 70s with the original participant was the Oregon Non-Game Wildlife Group. And they, that was in the early 70s. In the early 90s, we added four more to the program. And for years, there were five charities. And I guess I should start by saying that this program is the allows taxpayers, individual taxpayers, to donate all or part of their refund to the participating charities via the tax return. So all the individual tax returns have this, they have this ability. For years, for many years, there were five charities listed on the tax returns. Today we have 27 participants. There, in 2007, there was a change in the way we list those charities on the return. We list 12 charities now on the return, and we have two lines that are write-in lines where you could, so potentially a taxpayer could donate to 14 charities on one tax return. The change in 2007 was implemented a two-year rotation. So we list 12 charities for 2 years, and then we rotate them off and put 12 new ones on there. And the purpose of that was to give a little more parity to the donations because the numbers show that if you're on the tax return, you get more donations, both in numbers and dollars. And the effect of that has proved out the dollars have spread out more evenly for the charities, especially for those on the return. And you should have a little Excel spreadsheet that's two-sided that looks similar to this. And that just shows donations for the last 7 years since 2002, the number of contributors and the dollars. The total out in the far right column, that is actually, if you were a math person and you added these 7 years up, it would not equal that total. That is actually the total for the since we started this spreadsheet back in 94 or something like that. There were a bunch of rows hidden that we didn't show. So with that, I'll end and answer questions.
My name is Mac McDonald. I'm the chairman of the Charitable Checkoff Commission. I've been on it since the governor's first term, and in the second term I became the chairman. Each year we meet in June or July for 1 day, and the purpose of the meeting is to approve or disapprove new entities into the Charitable Checkoff program and to review several of the entities that are already in the Charitable Checkoff program. The program itself, to enter into it, you must have $1 million top line on your business during the year. You must get 10,000 signatures from Oregon registered voters. And you must have a home in Oregon, and each year we seem to be adding more to it. Now we have 27, and it's getting kind of bulky up at 27. The biggest deterrent to becoming a member of the Charitable Checkoff is, of course, the $1 million threshold. And we have, of the 27, they're all, I'd hate to have to pick one or two saying they're better than the other because they're all non-profit. They all support Oregonians, and it's a good program. Other states have gone and limited the number of charitable checkoff people, both on the form and in the booklet, when they get too unwieldy, and I'm thinking that maybe next session we're going to have to look at what the other states do and go to what the other states do. What the other states do is the first on takes the place when we get a new, or is removed when we get a new
member and the chair will check off. It's I hate to see anyone go off it because they are all good charities. But we've got to look at what's best. And the rotation of the charitable checkoff members, the 12 on the form, is six more than we used to have. But it seems to be working well in that everyone gets a chance at being on the tax form. If you're on the tax form, each person on the tax form normally makes more than all of them in the booklet each year. So the thing is, everyone wants on the tax form. But during this rotation, it just makes it fair and equal to all members of the charitable checkoff. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Questions? Yes, please.
Just one. What is the cost to the state of administering it, or is it taken out of collections?
It's taken out of the collections, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, my understanding is that the that on the electronic version of tax returns, all of them are listed. Did I misunderstand that? It's the paper form that where only part of them are listed, isn't that right?
Chair Barnhart, and it's basically the same. The electronic version does model the paper version. They're all listed on the paper version in our instruction booklet, and it's the same thing. You would have the same choice on the electronic version, but for there are 12 that are shown on the return, and the other 15 are listed in the instructions that you have to do an other, check the box for other.
Okay, please.
Let me just, if I might clarify, I think, Mr. Chair, what you may be talking about is input. When someone prepares their tax return electronically, on the input selections, depending on the software, more than what's on the face of the return may actually be there for a prima facie choice for the taxpayer, and that may be a bit different. And it would be interesting to see if, especially since we just passed that one bill for mandatory electronic filing, but it would be interesting to see as more taxpayers are using electronic software for tax prep, if that changes the contribution behavior.
Yeah. Yes. And now, is this listed in any particular order on your spreadsheet? Are the top 12 here the ones that were on the tax return for 2009, or how can we tell which ones were actually on the return for 2009?
Chair Barnhart, actually the order these are listed in are order of entrance to the program,
okay.
And it doesn't show up well. If this was a color spreadsheet, and the 12 that are on the return are actually highlighted.
Oh, I see. They are vaguely, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay. It's interesting to note that the number of people who actually made contributions varies quite a bit, even among the 12 that are highlighted. You suggested that one of the ways of managing it might be to... As new ones are added, that the oldest ones would be dropped off. I think that was your suggestion.
Yes, sir. But other states, what they do is the people that drop off, they drop off and they have a number of years before they can re-enter it.
I see. It is interesting to me to note that there's a wide variation in the number of contributions that are made. I'm looking, for example, at the Humane Society, Oregon Humane Society, and that doesn't appear to be one of the highlighted ones. So apparently it was just on the instructions and not on the form, and yet there were more contributions made to the Humane Society, I think, than anyone else, including the highlighted ones this past time. And some other large ones, Dornbecker Hospital, I guess, was highlighted. The Veterans Home was not, but again, it also had a pretty substantial number of contributions. But when you start looking at others that were actually on the form, many of them had far, far fewer contributions. I mean, it occurs to me, without thinking about this very much, that one of the things you might consider is whether, if we have to limit the number, we might want to think about limiting the number based on the apparent popularity of the charities rather than how long they've been on the form, just as another suggestion. I don't have any idea what the committee's view is about that, or even what my own might be after further study, but it does occur to me that that's something you might look at.
Representative Barnhart, after this session, I'll get together, or the commission will get together with the Department of Revenue, and we'll come up with a suggestion for the legislature. I might point out in the last 10 years, I must have had 40 or 50 calls from people wanting in on the charitable checks. The big thing that keeps people off is the $1 million threshold.
The size of their charity.
The size of the charity.
Yeah. Yeah. And that doesn't surprise me. Anything further? Thank you, gentlemen, very much. We do appreciate this update. And with that, we'll close the information meeting, and we will open a public hearing, finally, on House Bill 2564. Is that yours? Yeah. Chris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2564 adds the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association to the list of entities eligible for the program. As you just heard, by the listing and the place in the statute in the bill there in on lines 14 through 17, it effectively exempts them from this $1 million income requirement and puts them on the list. They still need to meet all of the other requirements of the program, the charitable aspect of the program and the signatures and so forth. It's just the exemption from the size, the $1 million in gross income.
Okay, thank you. And who do we have? We do have. Good. Genoa, Ingram, Jim, Oder, and Nicole, it must be Armstrong. Good morning.
Mr. Chair, Genoa Ingram representing the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, and there's no place in the world I would rather be right now than right here talking to you about this bill. This is a long time coming. As you know, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you especially for introducing the bill for us and giving it a timely hearing. As some of you know, this bill, a very similar bill or identical bill, 34, I believe it's 3414, passed unanimously in the House last legislative session. Unfortunately, it was the last bill to pass out of the House Revenue Committee and just ran out of time in the Senate. So we appreciate the timely scheduling. I'm over in Salishan this week at the Fire Marshals Conference, and Mr. Warner was kind enough to ask if I prefer to postpone the bill until after conference, and I said, not on your life. So I drove over from Salishan. Mr. Ader, former president of the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, drove over from Nestucca, and we appreciate Nicole here on behalf of the Fire Chiefs Association. And as you know, the volunteer firefighters represent approximately 7,400 volunteers throughout the state. Those of you from the Portland area and other larger cities probably won't appreciate the valuable resources that the volunteer firefighters provide because you have the benefit of paid firefighters. But for the rest of the state, including those combination departments such as Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, those departments and districts rely on volunteers to protect the public from fire. The Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association has, or I should say had, a fund that they use to pay certain benefits to both members of OVFA and non-members, including death benefits, disability if someone is injured on the job. There were equipment grants, scholarship grants, and that was a special fund that was not used for anything else other than to assist volunteer firefighters when those types of emergencies arose. That fund has been depleted, and we are looking, obviously, for ways to replenish that fund so that we can reward these individuals who ask nothing to serve their communities. We normally pay for a hardship grant $500, death benefit. We paid three or four last year, unfortunately, so $1,000 each in addition to the equipment and the training and the additional the additional things that we provide. In the winter of 2008-2009, OVFA went to make application for the charitable checkoff and discovered that we needed to have $1 million in assets. Now, the volunteer firefighters have no problem collecting signatures. They are very good at that, but there is no way we are ever going to have $1 million in assets, and that's why we're here today. I did want to address a comment that I think was probably made facetiously in 2009. They said, well, if they can afford a paid lobbyist, why do they need the tax checkoff? And I just want to say this, not because it's about me, but I'm not a paid lobbyist. I volunteer for the volunteers. And as you know, many of you know from my personal experience, I lost a home to a fire 10 years ago, and the volunteers showed up and put the fire out, and nobody sent me a bill, so I don't send them a bill. I don't want to take up a lot of time. I'm here to answer questions. Nicole and Jim are here as resources as well. We urge you to pass this bill, and especially in tough economic times when there's a segment of society who's willing to step up and say, we are willing to provide a crucial service for free. We just want to be able to give something back to them, and I hope you'll join me in showing appreciation for the OVFA.
Thank you. Please.
With the budget downfalls, I'm Jim Mader with Nistuck Fire, past president of OVFA. With, you know, the budget's going down, and the other thing that we're seeing is increased costs to in the instructors to bring them in to provide the training. We have been sending some people to Hillsborough Fire, sponsored a gentleman from Colorado, roughly $250 a person to go to this training for one day. So with our revenues down, this is what we're trying to be able to provide the grants back that we were able to provide for the volunteers. So it's just a way that we can keep these grants going and bring them back for these people to go to these types of training.
Thank you. Please.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Armstrong. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. We're here just to voice our support for the Volunteer Firefighters Association and their addition to the charitable checkoff program. And say on a personal note, growing up in a rural town in Oregon of 150 people, I am very familiar with the volunteer firefighters. Many members of my family were volunteer firefighters, had training, and answered a lot of calls that made a big difference in our little town. So we hope that you'll be able to support this bill and get it on its way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Discussion? I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony on House Bill 2564. Is there anyone else here today who would like to speak on House Bill 2564? I don't see any, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2564. Is there any other business to come before the committee this morning? This is the best schedule yet, colleagues. We get an hour and 20. Oh, yes. Friday morning, there will be no meeting of the Revenue Committee. There will, however, be a meeting of the Joint Tax Credit Committee, but it will not meet until 9 o'clock. And so, and for organizing, is that right?
That's correct,
Mr. Chair. We will have one work session tomorrow on bill introduction. Remind your colleagues, if they want the Revenue Committee to introduce bills, to get those bills to the LRO today. And the criteria for bill introduction in the Revenue Committee is, does it have something to do with the committee's charge? If it does, then our practice has been to introduce the bill. Obviously, members can introduce bills on their own name, but if they want the committee to introduce it, they need to get it to the LRO sometime today so that they can have it ready for us tomorrow morning. Anything else? If there isn't, with that, the committee is adjourned.